everyone, and finally, welcome back to Daily Kaylee. As I'm sure you've noticed, I've taken sort of like a mid-season hiatus, you may say. I just had a lot going on at the end of 2021, and it was obviously flu season, and back and forth, me and Anya were both sick constantly, and we just had so much going on. We had busy weeks for months on end. And this podcast is in no way a burden to me. It is my passion. I didn't not release because I wasn't feeling like it. I didn't want to put out something that I was not proud of. I'm a firm believer of quality over quantity, and I will never just pump out episodes that you can tell I really don't care about the topic. Which is why I'm finally back after a few long months. We have less than 10 episodes left scheduled for this season, and season 3 will start September 3rd. And I am so excited. I'm feeling so grateful for you guys. Thank you for continuing to listen to me. This has been such a passion of mine, like coming to life. I can't even put it into words how grateful I am for you. I just can't believe that we're almost at the end of season 2. I started this podcast in 2020 at the very beginning of the pandemic, and we have come so far since then. I started this before Anya was born, and she'll be 2 in August. Anyways, sorry for being super sentimental on this true crime podcast. I'm sure that doesn't happen often. But today's episode, it's a little extreme. Today's episode is about the Valentine's Day murders, which you may or may not have heard of. The Valentine's Day murders refer to the murders of 19-year-old Jesse McBain and his girlfriend, Patricia Mann. I would like to start this episode by saying that this is a cold case. This has never been solved in 50 years. It's bizarre. On Valentine's Day in 1971, Jesse drove over to his girlfriend Patricia's college dormitory. She was taking classes. She was in college. She lived with a couple other girls in the dorm. And she was basically like an intern at the nearby hospital. She was not yet a nurse because, like I said, she was still in college, but that was going to be her future place of employment. On Valentine's Day, the hospital that she was interning at and like taking her nursing studies, I guess that's what you call it, they were hosting a dance for the doctors and nurses. And since she was an intern there, she was invited to the dance. So that's what they were going on this romantic Valentine's Day. You know, they're 19. They probably did not have a lot of money to go do something extravagant. Like I said, she was in school. So they were going to this hospital dance. He picked her up. They went to the dance. I'm sure they had a great time. Around 11:30 that evening, they said their goodbyes to their friends, to her colleagues, and they left. They walked back to Jesse's car. The place that they went after the dance, it's referred to as Lover's Lane. It was not necessarily a like little secret hideaway for lovers, but it was an empty lot for a housing development. They had paved the road, but they hadn't began building houses yet. So it was just like an empty lot, basically. And it was referred to as Lover's Lane because that's where teenagers would sneak off for alone time to be romantic. You get the gist. You've seen 80s horror movies. So, because they had not began building houses, they had the road, but it was still, covered in greenery. There were trees, bushes, plants. Like, it had not been completely cleared out yet. So it was still pretty private. Patricia's dorm had a 1 a.m. curfew time. Her friends knew that it was Valentine's Day and that she was with her serious boyfriend. So they figured, like, she'd probably sneak back in, like, they were probably having fun. I mean, they were kids. They were probably just lost track of time, you know, so sweet, little lovebirds, whatever. However, the following morning, Patricia still had not returned. And this is not like Patricia whatsoever. She was mature, she was responsible, she had never missed the curfew before. She was not the kind of teenage girl that wanted to be out late getting into mischief or whatever. She was very responsible, just a very mature young adult. When she didn't return that morning, they started to worry. But at this point, it was nothing more than like, wow, like, I hope she's okay. Like, maybe she's at the hospital. When she did not turn up at the hospital, that is when it escalated. Her roommates were extremely worried. They started calling around to other local hospitals, the police station, just seeing if there had been, like, a car accident or anything suspicious that had been reported, and there was nothing. So at this point, Patricia and her boyfriend were reported missing. Her roommates were so anxious that they actually, like, went on, like, a manhunt for her, that, if you get what I'm saying. But like I said, they didn't know where she had went. They went around their usual hangout spots. They went around campus looking everywhere that they think that Patricia might have been, because like I said, she was a responsible young lady. There was only a few handful of places she probably would have been hanging out at the next day. Finally, someone had the idea to check out Lover's Lane, which is, like I said, the empty housing development. When they got there, they found Jesse's empty car, and Patricia and Jesse were nowhere to be found. The car was locked, and their coats were still in the back seat, like they had taken them off to, like, go on a walk or something. But there was no damage to the car. It did not seem like anyone who had been in the car was taken out by force. Everything seemed completely normal, except that, obviously, they were missing. They were just gone. The police talked to Jesse and Patricia's parents, and they obviously knew nothing. They had no idea that they were missing until the police called them. They hadn't heard from them. At first, their family members. Okay, so like I said, Patricia and Jesse were in a serious relationship. They were both responsible adults. At first, their family members assumed that it was probably nothing. They probably just, like, ran off to skip town and get married, and they'd be back. And that would have been a very reasonable explanation, except it was very suspicious that no one had heard of these plans. Not only was it weird that their family hadn't heard, but even Patricia's best friends in her dorm, she had no plans to do this. Like, she had never mentioned this to them. It did not seem like it was even, like, on her radar at the moment. This is when the police and Patricia and Jesse's friends and family realized that something happened to Jesse and Patricia. They did not just wander off and get lost. They did not run off to get married. Someone had to have harmed them or taken them. Someone knows something. For 2 weeks, they found nothing. Police officers and local volunteers conducted extensive searches of the entire area of Lover's Lane, and there was no trace. I mean, there was not, like, a dropped bracelet, a footprint. I mean, there was nothing. For 2 weeks, they found absolutely nothing. No trace. They followed up on leads and tips, and absolutely nothing came of it. After these 2 weeks of nothing happening, the police decided to widen their search. They used helicopters to survey the woods. They had divers searching in lakes. They still found nothing. On February 25th, 1971, almost 2 weeks, like I said, after they went missing, there was a surveyor in Orange County, North Carolina. It was a neighboring county. He was walking along a dirt road in the backwoods of Orange County, and he sees something very suspicious. It's about 50 meters or so off of the trail, and he thinks he sees, like, the limb of a mannequin just laying in the leaves. And he's like, okay, that's weird. Let me check that out. So as he walks up, he realizes this is a human leg. Like, this is clearly human flesh. It is not a mannequin. He runs off to a nearby diner so he can phone the police. And once forensic investigators come to check it out, they find not just a human leg, but two human corpses in the woods. And of course, these belong to Jesse and Patricia. They were clearly decomposing. They had been just left out in the elements for 2 weeks. But that wasn't even the most disturbing part, shockingly. The couple were tied against a tree. They had their hands tied behind their backs, and then they were standing beside each other with their backs against a tree. And, like I said, they were tied to the tree. They were tied to the tree before they died. It seemed that once the killer had tied them to the tree, he began to torture them. He didn't just, you know, shoot them, stab them. This was not a simple murder, if you could say. This was not motivated by seemingly anything. They had all of their valuables. Neither of them had been assaulted sexually or raped. There were no signs of any ulterior motives other than this person wanted to torture them. Jesse's ear and his mouth were still full of blood. He also had multiple, like, abrasions on his face that seemed as if he had just been beaten senselessly before he died. At some point before their death, the killer had ripped off all of their eyelashes before continuing to beat them. It looks like after the killer was tired of just beating them, he put rope collars around their necks. And the way that he had tied the knot, it was so that it could continue to be tightened. And what the police took away from these rope collars with the specific knots is that he slowly tightened them until they could no longer breathe. He did it slowly, specifically to torture them. Like I said, they still had all of their valuables. This was not motivated by robbery at all. Jesse had an expensive wristwatch, and he had an expensive class ring from when he graduated high school. Patricia was still wearing jewelry because, like I said, they went to a dance. She was all dressed up, and her purse was actually still left in the car. And, I mean, like I said, there was literally no ulterior motive. And because the police did not find a motive, they had no suspects. They had nowhere to turn after this. The FBI obviously got involved. The local sheriff station. And, I mean, they had everyone working on this case. But with all of the work that they did, there was just nothing. They had a few suspects pop up that were quickly cleared. I mean, they had people come and take polygraph tests. They had DNA sampled. I mean, there was just nothing. Finally, they thought to interview the doctor at the hospital that Patricia was interning with. When they brought him in, he failed a polygraph. And this was the first person that had failed the polygraph. He was, at this point, he was the only suspect simply because he failed the polygraph. When they brought him into question, after the polygraph, he did not want to cooperate and he did not want to give them a sample of his DNA. This has made him the number one suspect. And I'm going to be real with you guys. I see the simplicity of him just giving up his DNA to be cleared. And like I said, that's all we're going off of, that he failed a polygraph. I don't know if he had an alibi. They've never released this. But I'm assuming, since he was never arrested, that's all they had. There are multiple reasons that he could have for not wanting to give up his DNA. But I, based on the evidence that we have, I personally do not believe that the doctor is guilty. I think this was some random person who decided to prey on this young couple that was in the middle of an empty housing development with no one to see or hear them if something happened. I think it was just some sick weirdo. I don't think there was a personal connection between the killer and Jesse and Patricia, honestly. Now, like I said, I could be wrong, but that's just my gut instinct, if that makes sense. Forty-three years after the murder of Jesse and Patricia in 2014, the Orange County Sheriff's Department had Detective Tim Horn, and he was actually on the case when they first went missing, so he was still working there. He got a phone call from a cousin of Patricia. Her name is Carolyn Spivey, and she contacted him with fresh information regarding the murder of her cousin. Detective Horn opened up the closed case file. I mean, it was a cold case. There was nothing more they could do. He opened it up and pored over all of the old statements, the evidence. They reanalyzed all the former suspects. They considered new avenues of what could have happened to them. And once again, the only thing that they came up with was that the doctor had to be guilty. He was the only one that failed the polygraph. He would not give up his DNA, and he was also the only suspect who knew them personally. In 2014, this is when they actually were able to extract a DNA sample from the ropes that were used to strangle Jesse and Patricia. Now, I mean, this DNA was 40 years old, so it was very volatile. When they sampled it, the one conclusion they came to is that the DNA on this rope did not belong to either Jesse or Patricia. So the likelihood, obviously, was that it had to have belonged to the killer. However, the DNA sample did not match anyone in their system. They contacted the doctor once again, 40 years later, over 40 years later, to have him come in again and clear his name, and he still did not want to give up his DNA. Once again, I'm going to say it one more time, one last time in this episode. It's still a cold case. They were not able to charge the doctor regardless of the DNA sample. So they have never shared what other evidence they may have that would lead them to suspect the doctor other than him failing the polygraph and knowing both Jesse and Patricia personally. They have never released that information. I don't know if the ball is still in their court, and if they have something that they're hoping to catch him with. I'm not sure what the situation with that is, but as of now, this is still a cold case. And it is a very gruesome cold case. I know that it's been almost 50 years now, or it's been 50 years, but I hope that this case can be solved sooner rather than later. I hope you guys enjoyed this case. It was kind of a short one compared to other episodes, but like I said, it was very creepy, and the fact that it's never been solved just solidifies its creepiness, in my opinion. Let me guys know what you think of this episode. I am hoping to release, like I said, 10 more episodes in season 2. It might be a little bit less than 10. I have 7 scheduled right now, and I am looking for topics for 4 of those. So DM me, leave me a comment on Instagram at Daily Kaylee Podcast. Let me know what kind of case you guys want me to dive into. Thank you guys so much for returning to listen to me tonight, and I'll see you guys soon. Bye, guys.